It's about a couple of weeks since we were in our studies of the life of Christ, and we're looking at the 12 apostles being called. Remember that Jesus has had disciples all along through his ministry, but now he's going to pick 12 specific disciples whom he will call apostles for special tasks. And Jesus, of course, is looking ahead. He knows he's going to die at some point. Probably it's a year or two off. But he knows that when he's gone, he's going to need these men to carry on his work. He's going to be this, they're going to be the special focus of his attention now as he prepares them for his work. And as Jesus is getting ready to call these disciples, he prepares himself, as we saw last time. He, it says, Luke 6:12, went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. Jesus is going to make one of the most important decisions of his ministry, and he knows he needs to make a connection with the Father to seek his will. He's a real man who knows he needs the Father's guidance. So in that sense, he is like we are. We need God's guidance. I don't believe that God the Father just magically beamed a list of disciples into Jesus' head, but Jesus, in his humanity, by the guidance of the Spirit, for sure, and by the sovereignty of God, chose these 12 men because he decided they were the best to do what he needed them to do. Now, Jesus called the 12, and we won't go through these verses in detail, but he called the 12 to do a number of things, to cast out demons, to heal diseases, to heal sickness, it says here. Also, Mark says that they were to preach and have authority to cast out demons. And so, all the things that Jesus has already been doing, the apostles are going to do. They're going to heal, they're going to cast out demons, they're going to preach. They're going to just carry on Jesus' ministry. And we asked the question last time, why 12? Why is it that Jesus had 12 disciples and not 20 or 7? And the best guess is that it's associated with the 12 tribes of Israel. Remember, later on, we'll see in Matthew, I believe it's chapter 19, when Jesus says these 12 disciples are going to sit upon 12 thrones and judge Israel. Also, Luke 22 says the same thing. You will sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. So I think there's a connection there of 12 and 12. 12 disciples, 12 tribes of Israel. Now let's move on to the actual disciples themselves and see what we can learn about them. And we've read the list already in the last week. Let me just remind you of a few things we notice here. We see these disciples arranged in groups of four. You look at the four places in the scriptures where all 12 are named, Matthew, Mark, Luke, not John, but Acts, they're named again. And they're always 12, except in Acts, of course, because Judas has killed himself. Matthias takes his place. And if you group them in fours, you see the groups of four are always the same. And in fact, the first in each group of four is the same. So we have Simon Peter, and then Andrew, James, and John. We have a second group of four, Philip, Bartholomew, Thomas, and Matthew. And then a third group of four, James, son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, or Judas, son of James, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot. So it may well be that Jesus took the 12 and he divided them into groups of four, and then he had one man who was sort of the leader of that group of four. We can't say for sure, but it may well be that. It can be a little confusing for us. We like to have, when we have groups of people, it's easier to have people with all different names. So you say, hey Brett, and you don't have three guys looking at you. But we have here, in the disciples, we have two Simons, we have two Jameses, and two Judases. But they're all very common names back then. Maybe they didn't have as much creativity in the way they name people as we do today. But yeah, so we have these names that are used more than once. And so it requires a little bit of care sometimes. And there's also multiple James and Phillips in particular in the scriptures. So is it James, the brother of John, or is it James, the brother of Jesus? There's other James. There's also Philip the Apostle. There's Philip the Evangelist we see in Acts. So you got to be a little bit careful when you see these names. Don't confuse them with other men of the same name. We don't know where all these men came from. The ones we do know about come from Galilee, with the possible exception for Judas, exception of Judas Iscariot. We'll look at him in a little while. But we also made a point last time that none of these men, again, as far as we can tell, are great in the world's eyes. Jesus didn't go to the best seminaries, the best centers of learning in Jerusalem or anywhere else for that matter, and choose the cream of the crop. He didn't go about choosing these people like we would choose them today. But he chose these ordinary men, a lot of them fishermen or of other occupations we don't know about. We know Matthew had been a tax collector, so he had been something of a compromiser with Rome. But these men are not the kind of men that you would expect to choose today. But Jesus knew that they were the right men for the task. Yeah, and we could look a lot at Paul and the direction that Paul had as an apostle with the Gentiles, the fact that he was a Roman citizen, the fact that he had more learning than the others, perhaps the fact that he was more steeped in the Old Testament tradition because he was going to go to the Jews around the known world and dispute with the religious leaders at that time. Yeah, it is interesting that Paul is very different in some ways from these 12, yeah. Now, the first group of four, we've already looked at them quite a bit, and we'll see more about them later. We won't spend a lot of time on them right now. But all four of them, as you might remember, are fishermen: Peter, Andrew, James, and John. Simon Peter, the name Simon is short for Simeon, probably. And he's also called Peter, of course, or Cephas. Cephas is the Aramaic word for rock, and Peter comes from the Greek word for rock. And there's a prophecy in John 1, as we saw in some months ago, what Jesus will call Simon in Matthew 16. Remember, Jesus says, "I say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overpower it." So Peter here, Simon Peter, is the rock. And Matthew, you might remember, calls Peter first. And that makes sense. Peter is the disciple by far we see most of all in the Gospels and in the book of Acts as well. So he's the most prominent of all 12. Andrew, we know less about, that Simon Peter's brother, of course. He, when we see him in the Gospels, and we don't see him very often doing things, but he brought people to Jesus. You might remember in John chapter 1, a few passages in John. Look at John 1, verses 40 to 42. So Andrew was already a disciple of John the Baptist. It says, "One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He found first his own brother Simon and said to him, 'We have found the Messiah,' which translated means Christ." And verse 42 says, "He brought him to Jesus." So Andrew is one who brought Peter to Jesus. Look at John chapter 6. John chapter 6. Jesus is standing before this group of 5,000 men, more women and children. He knows they are hungry. And he says to Philip, let's look at verse 5, "Jesus, therefore, lifting up his eyes and seeing a large crowd was coming to him, said to Philip, 'Where are we to buy bread so that these may eat?' This he was saying to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone to receive a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, 'There is a lad here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are these for so many people?' So Andrew brought this boy with the 5 loaves and 2 fish to Jesus." Chapter 12 of John. Chapter 12, verse 20. "Now there were some Greeks among those who were going up to worship at the feast. These then came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and began to ask him, saying, 'Sir, we wish to see Jesus.'" Notice Philip doesn't go directly to Jesus, but he says, "Philip came and told Andrew. Andrew and Philip came and told Jesus." So these Greeks want to meet Jesus. They know Philip is one of his disciples. Philip goes to Andrew. Andrew and Philip then go to Jesus and tell them about these Greeks. And it doesn't actually say whether Jesus saw the Greeks or not. It kind of drops him from the story at that point. Another time we see Andrew is in Mark 13. I'll just read these verses, verses 3 and 4. As he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew were questioning him privately, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign when all these things are going to be fulfilled?" Now, we've read these few passages, 3 in John, 1 in Mark. Otherwise, Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter, is only mentioned in the list of disciples. So we know really almost nothing about Andrew, except that he was a fisherman, and he's a brother of Peter. So, Peter, Andrew, now James and John. James himself here is never mentioned apart from his brother John. He is the first of the 12 to be martyred. It says in Acts 12:2 that Herod Agrippa I put James, brother John, to death with the sword. And remember that this James, James the brother of John, the son of Zebedee, is not the James we see later in the book of Acts. That James is the brother of Jesus himself. So the James say at the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15 is James the brother of Jesus. The other James has already been martyred at that point. The fourth disciple, John. This is the disciple whom Jesus loved. He's the author of the fourth gospel and, of course, the letters 1st, 2nd, 3rd John and Revelation. As far as we can tell from history, he was the last of the 12 to die, and he apparently died of natural causes. We can't be certain, but the stories that survive about the other disciples may or may not be true. But as far as we can tell, all the other ones were martyred for their faith, their testimony of Christ. But John, for God's own purposes, let him live until he died a natural death. Again, as far as we can tell. Mark 3:17 says about James and John that they are the son of Zebedee, and Jesus gave them the name Boanerges, which means sons of thunder. There are different ideas about what sons of thunder mean. Is it because they spoke so forcefully, or is it because it has sort of a hot-tempered personality? Anybody hear thunder this morning? It's unusual around here, but we heard somebody at our house. I saw a brief flash and then a roar of thunder. Is that the rumbling that James and John had as they spoke? We can't say for sure, but we do know in Luke chapter 9, I think you know this passage, Luke 9:54, there were some Samaritans who did not receive Jesus and the disciples. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" So James and John were very indignant when Jesus was not received well, and they wanted to consume these Samaritans in fire. I don't know why they thought they could do that, but I guess they were pretty confident in their prophetic voice. They could do something like the Old Testament prophets and call down fire to destroy these people. And Jesus, of course, rebuked them. Look also at Mark chapter 10, verse 35. Another well-known story. And again, we always see James with his brother John. James, as far as we know, never says anything by himself. James and John, the two sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus saying, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Grant that we may sit one on your right and one on your left in your glory." So they are here ambitious. They want to be on Jesus' right and left hand. We don't really care who. James, John, John, James, either one, it's fine. As long as we're sitting next to you, Jesus, when you come in your glory, that's good enough for us. And of course, those are the places of greatest prominence in Jesus' kingdom. But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking." Verse 38, "Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We are able." And I don't think they have any clue what they're saying here. Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you shall drink, and the cup shall be you shall be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized." That is, that they would suffer even as Jesus suffered, and James, of course, would die a martyr's death. "But to sit on my right or on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." Hearing this, the ten began to feel indignant with James and John. Maybe they were just upset because they thought to ask first. I think our kids do the same thing, right? It's the first one asks for a particular candy, cake, whatever it might be. And the others are upset because they forgot to ask. They didn't think to ask first. But they don't have a desire to show preference to each other. They just want to get to the top of the heap. So that is James and John, the brothers, the sons of Zebedee. Now, remember that Peter, James, and John form sort of a core group. We see in Mark chapter 5, verse 37, there was a woman, or a young girl who had died, a synagogue official's daughter, and Jesus went and he raised her from the dead, but it says, verse 37, he allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. So, in some circumstances, Andrew is kind of the odd man out from this group of three. We also see in Matthew 17, verse 1, at the Transfiguration, 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, his brother, and led them up to a high mountain by themselves. And then in Gethsemane, Mark 14, 32 and 33, they came to a place named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here till I have prayed. And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be very distressed and troubled. So it appears that at least in these circumstances, when Jesus wants a more intimate collection of his disciples, sort of a representative group of the disciples, he picks Peter and James and John. Any questions or thoughts so far before we move to the second group of four? Okay. Philip is next. He's, again, the first named in the second group of four. We see him a few times, but not that often. Look at John chapter 1. And a lot of these sort of extra mentions of these disciples, these apostles, are in the Gospel of John. John 1, 43 to 45. The next day, he, that is Jesus, purposed to go into Galilee, and he found Philip, and Jesus said to him, follow me. Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. That is the town Bethsaida on the northeast shore of the Sea of Galilee. Later they lived in Capernaum. So Peter and Andrew likely moved west at some point earlier. And it says here, verse 45, Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. So Philip is the one who found Nathanael and brought him. Andrew and Philip are both mentioned in the other gospel list of apostles. And mentioned also a couple times in John together. Remember, I just read those passages where Jesus speaks to Philip, and then Andrew brings the little boy with the five loaves and two fish. We saw in John chapter 12 when some Greeks approach Philip, and Philip goes with Andrew to talk to Jesus. So Philip and Andrew seem to be at least somewhat close as far as we can tell. Otherwise, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Philip is only mentioned in these lists of apostles. So in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Philip does really nothing. He just shows up. And remember, this is not the same Philip as the one who spoke to the Ethiopian eunuch in the book of Acts. So don't get your Philips mixed up. So we know a lot more about Philip the evangelist later on than we do about Philip the apostle. Next, we see Bartholomew. Bartholomew. And we just saw in John, in fact, you might still be there in John chapter 1. It's likely that Bartholomew, rather, and Nathanael are the same person. And Nathanael is only mentioned in this passage, John chapter 1. We see here, verse 45 of John 1. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nathanael said to him, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. And Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said of him, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit. Nathanael said to him, how do you know me? And Jesus answered and said to him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. Nathanael answered him, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. So Nathanael here, early on, recognizes that Jesus is the Son of God, that he is the King of Israel, an early testimony to the person of Jesus Christ. Also, look at the end of John. So we see Nathanael here in John 1. We see him also in John 21, just briefly. John 21, verse 2. Actually, let's go back to verse 1. John 21, verse 1. After these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and he manifested himself in this way. That's the Sea of Galilee. Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. So in this little group of disciples who are there at the sea, Jesus visits them after his resurrection. Nathanael is part of that group. Now, I said earlier that Nathanael here may well be the Bartholomew in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Can't say 100%, but it's likely. The name Bartholomew means son of Tolmai, so it may not even be a proper name, like calling me Davidson or calling one of my sons Johnson. That in some cultures people do that. You call them by their father's name, a patronymic. And so Bartholomew means son of Tolmai. So that may be just the name that Bartholomew was given, sort of as a nickname, a way of identifying him. But maybe his proper name really was Nathanael. Another possible clue is that Matthew, Mark, and Luke never mention Nathanael, and John never mentions Bartholomew. So it could be that these men are the same, just that John uses his proper name, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke use another name, son of Tolmai. Also, we notice here that Matthew, Mark, and Luke mention Philip and Bartholomew together in their lists. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, we see Philip followed by Bartholomew. And in John chapter 1, who was the one who brought Nathanael to Jesus? It was Philip. So we see this connection in John 1 between Philip and Nathanael. We see a possible connection in Matthew, Mark, and Luke between Philip and Bartholomew. So it's reasonable to suppose, but not certain, that Bartholomew and Nathanael are the same men. Let's move on now to Matthew. Considering we have a gospel from Matthew, we really don't know a lot about him, after all, either. According to tradition, he is the author of the first gospel, and there are some clues in Matthew that Matthew is indeed the author of that gospel. When you look at Mark and Luke, you remember the call of Levi. Levi was a tax collector, and Jesus goes to him, and he says, "Levi, follow me." But then later on, Mark and Luke mention this guy, Matthew. But Mark and Luke never say, "Oh, by the way, Matthew, he's actually the guy Levi from earlier in my book." They make no such connection. So if you only had Mark and Luke, you would have no idea that Levi and Matthew were the same man. It's only Matthew that gives us that understanding. In fact, we only see, here, let's go back a bit. Notice here in Matthew, in this list of disciples, Matthew chapter 10, Matthew is the only one who mentions again that Matthew is the tax collector. In the list in Mark and Luke, it just mentions Matthew, just Matthew. But Matthew, in his own gospel, reminds us that he is the Levi from before, and he is Matthew, who is the tax collector. I think it's a sign of his humility, perhaps, just to remind you that this is the man who I was, and this is what Jesus called me out of. I was a tax collector. I was in cahoots with the Romans to defraud my people, but Jesus brought me out of that. And only Matthew mentions that, again, that he is a tax collector. Now, we met Matthew before in Capernaum on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. He was presumably very wealthy as a tax collector, but he would be an outcast from his fellow Jews. But he gave it all up to follow Jesus. Just to remind us, look at Luke chapter 5. Remember here in Luke, he's going to be called Levi, not Matthew, but it's the same man. Luke chapter 5, verses 27 to 29. After that, he, Jesus, went out and noticed a tax collector named Levi sitting in the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he left everything behind and got up and began to follow him. And Levi gave a big reception for him in his house. And there was a great crowd of tax collectors and other people who were reclining at the table with them. So this is the man that Jesus called out of his tax collection business, a very lucrative one at that. When you see the parallel in the Gospel of Matthew, he is called Matthew. So that's how we know Matthew and Levi are the same person. Now otherwise, beyond those mentions in the Gospels, we know nothing about Matthew himself. Nothing about his later life. There are stories, legends about him, but we know nothing for sure. You know, as we get further along in these lists, the disciples tend to get more and more obscure in terms of what we know about their lives. Now Thomas here. After Matthew comes Thomas. He's listed third in the second group of four in Matthew's list. He's listed last in Mark and Luke, but he's listed second in Acts. Don't know exactly why. But he's only mentioned by name in the Synoptic Gospels. What are the Synoptics again? Yeah, Matthew, Mark, and Luke are the Synoptics. They tend to have lots of parallels. So Thomas is just mentioned in these lists. We get a little bit about him in the Gospel of John. Let's look at John chapter 11. It's almost as though, I think this is likely, that John himself knew Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and he wants to fill in some of the cracks that Matthew, Mark, and Luke may have missed, and John wanted to emphasize some things that the other three didn't. So we get a little richer understanding of some of the apostles in the Gospel of John than we do just reading Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and see how the Spirit of God enriches our understanding by giving us four Gospels. John 11, verse 16. Actually, let's go back a little bit. Lazarus has died, and Jesus has not actually gone to raise Lazarus yet. He's on his way. And verse 14 says, Jesus then said to him plainly, Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. The disciples know that there are some troubles with the Jewish leaders. The disciples want to stay away from Jerusalem. They want to stay away from anywhere close to Jerusalem. Verse 16, therefore Thomas, who was called Didymus, which means twin, Aramaic word meaning twin, and Thomas is from Aramaic word meaning twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us go also so that we may die with him. So this man Thomas, or Didymus, is bold and brave, perhaps pessimistic. Okay, we're going to go, let's just go and die, maybe in a blaze of glory, that kind of thing. Or maybe he's just so attached with Jesus, as whatever Jesus is going to do, we want to be with him. But he's certainly very brave here, bold, to be willing to die with Jesus at this point. I made a mistake before. Didymus is twin in Greek. Thomas is Aramaic for twin. So Thomas, Didymus mean the same thing, just one is in Greek, one is in Aramaic. John 14, verse 5. Another mention of Thomas. If you were to list some of your favorite verses, I think probably for many of us, John 14, 6 would be one of those, right? And probably most of us have learned it even as children. Jesus said, John 14, verse 6, what did he say? I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. Well, who do we have to thank for that verse? You ever think about that? Look at verse 5. Thomas said to him, Lord, we do not know where you are going, and how do we know the way? Jesus has just said, I'm going to prepare a place for you, and I'm going there, and I'm going to receive you myself. And Thomas is the one who asked the question that Jesus answers in John 14, verse 6. So in a way, you could say that we have Thomas to thank, because he's a little bit clueless here, we have Thomas to thank for this amazing verse, John 14, verse 6. Jesus said to him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. That's a response to Thomas. We do not know where you're going, and how do we know the way? I'm wondering what Jesus really thought here. Is he frustrated with Thomas? Because he's been with Jesus for years. How can you not know where I'm going? How can you be so ignorant? And we see some of that later on, even later on in verse chapter 14. In fact, I just realized I skipped a verse on Philip. Let's go back here real quick. Verse 7. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you know him and have seen him. And Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, And it is good enough for us that Jesus is saying, I'm here. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But Philip wants more. He wants to see the Father. And Jesus said to him, have I been so long with you, and yet you have not come to know me, Philip? He who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? So Jesus here is rebuking Philip for his lack of understanding. You don't know me yet? How can you not know that if you've seen me, you have seen the Father? I am the Son of God. If you've seen me, you have seen the Father. Now, back to Thomas. What is Thomas most famous for? Doubting, right? You think Thomas, you think of doubting. Doubting Thomas is a phrase we use to this day. Imagine 2,000 years from now, if it was Brave Brett or Bold Craig or Cowardly So-and-so, if your name was legendary in 2,000 years for something that really wasn't very good. He's not known as the Bold Thomas from John chapter 11, but he is known as the Doubting Thomas from John chapter 20. John 20, verses 24 to 29. But Thomas, one of the 12 called Didymus, remember that means twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So this first episode, in starting verse 19, Jesus meets them on a Sunday, and Thomas is not with them. So the other disciples were saying to him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see in his hands the imprint of the nails, and put my finger into the place of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. After 8 days, that is probably the next Sunday, his disciples were again inside, and Thomas with them. Jesus came, the doors having been shut, and stood in their midst and said, peace be with you. And then he said to Thomas, reach here with your finger and see my hands, and reach here your hand and put into my side, and do not be unbelieving, but believing. Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. A beautiful testimony of the sovereignty and the deity of Jesus Christ. Unfortunately, we don't remember this phrase as much as the previous phrase. We don't remember Thomas the worshiper so much as Thomas the doubter. But to his credit, we have to remember verse 28 as well. He says, my Lord and my God. And Jesus said to him, because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed. So that is the Apostle Thomas. And that is all we know about him also. Well, there are four more to look at here. Any questions so far? About any of these men? Okay. The third four. And as usual, in this third group of four, we have one man named first, always, James, the son of Alphaeus. But it's interesting that we never see him doing anything in the Gospels. Doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, he's just there. He's called James, the son of Alphaeus, of course, to distinguish him from James, the son of Zebedee. Now, remember, the name James comes from what Hebrew name? No fair for the preacher on the book of James to say. Anybody else? Jacob, that's right. It comes from the name Jacob. And so there are these multiple Jacobs here in the Gospels, and particularly James, the son of Zebedee, and James, the son of Alphaeus. Now, look at Mark chapter 15. Because there are several James, the question is, is this James the same as another James? Mark chapter 15. Verse 40. And this is just as Jesus has died. He's hanging from the cross and he yields up his spirit. There were, verse 40 of Mark 15, some women looking on from a distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James the Less, and Joseph, and Salome. So we have this Mary, the mother of James the Less. Now, some people will say that this James the Less is the same as James, the son of Alphaeus, where the term less may mean younger, or perhaps he was shorter, or perhaps he was less prominent than James, the son of Zebedee. So he might be like a James the Less may be more like James Jr., or might be a name like Shorty. James is shorter than the other James, or he's just less prominent. And that is all we really know of James, the son of Alphaeus. Next, let's look at Simon the Zealot. Simon the Zealot. And this, again, we have a man with the same name as another disciple, a more prominent disciple. So we have Simon the Zealot, so we distinguish him from Simon Peter. And like James, the son of Alphaeus, he is never seen doing anything. Now, Matthew and Mark, we have the word zealot used in Greek, Simon the Zealot. Oh, sorry. I should need to look this up. Made a mistake. But there's a term Canaanian. That's right. Matthew Mark uses the term Canaanian, which means zealot. So Canaanian is an Aramaic word meaning zealot. So Luke uses the Greek word for zealot, and Matthew and Mark use an Aramaic word for zealot, somebody who's zealous for something. Now, some link this term zealot, with a Jewish nationalist group. Remember, some decades after Jesus came, there was a revolt in Judea, Jerusalem. For several years, the Jews revolted against the Roman rule, and the Romans came in 70 AD and wiped out Jerusalem and scattered the Jews everywhere. That was triggered by these Jewish nationalists, which were called zealots. Now, in this view, Simon the Zealot, who would have been, in this case, very much against Roman rule, would have been a polar opposite of whom? Which disciple? He would be a polar opposite of whom? Who would he be opposite to? Matthew, right? Matthew would be sort of the insider, the one who's compromising with Rome. If Simon here really is this political sort of zealot, he would be on the opposite side of where Matthew was. It may also just mean that this Simon was very zealous for God and the law. Paul himself calls himself a zealot in Acts 22:3. I am a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated under Gamaliel, strictly according to the law of our fathers, being zealous for God, just as you all are today. The term zealous is the same word that's used in Luke for Simon the Zealot. In Galatians 1:14, Paul says, I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries among my countrymen, being more extremely zealous for my ancestral traditions. So this term zealot or Canaanian can mean you're zealous for anything, really. You can be zealous for a football team or whatever they had equivalent in those days. You can be zealous for political things like the later zealots were against the Romans. Or you could be zealous for God. So we don't know for sure whether Simon was zealous politically or zealous religiously. We just can't say for sure. But whatever he was zealous. And that's, again, all we really know about him. We know from his name, this term used him, Simon the Zealot. Next, we have Thaddeus, or also Judas, son of James. We see here in Matthew and Mark, we have Thaddeus. And in Luke and Acts, we have Judas, son of James. Could be the same man. Judas is a Greek form of Judah, and that was a common name. Same name as Jude, the Lord's brother. So we have several Judes, too, in the New Testament. So Judas, we have obviously Judas Iscariot, we'll see in a minute. We also have Thaddeus, Judas. We have Jude, the brother of Jesus. But it makes it easier to call Jude, Jude, instead of calling Jude, Judas. Then you're confused. Is this Judas the Bible writer, or Judas the betrayer of Jesus? So in English, we have a good way of distinguishing Jude, the good guy, versus Judas, the bad guy. And then we have Judas, son of James, who's sort of the other good guy that we know nothing about. He's called the son of James, of course, to distinguish him from the more famous Judas Iscariot. And the only time we see him, other than just his name in the list, is in John chapter 14. Let's look there. John chapter 14. Verse 22. Jesus has said in verse 21, he who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me, and he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and will disclose myself to him. And then it says, verse 22, Judas, not Iscariot, said to him, Lord, what then has happened that you are going to disclose yourself to us and not to the world? Jesus answered and said to him, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our abode with him. So all we see of Judas is him asking this question. What has happened that you're going to disclose yourself to us and not to the world? And that is the end of what Judas, son of James, has to say to us for Thaddeus. Well, we have left now Judas Iscariot, and I don't want to race through this. We only have a few minutes, so sorry to break off here. I wanted to finish, but I get long-winded sometimes, or every time. So any questions before we wrap things up? All right, let's pray. Father, we thank you for these men that you've called to be your disciples. Thank you for their example to us, even though most of them are very obscure. We know almost nothing about them, yet we do know that you picked them to be the ones who conveyed the gospel of Jesus Christ for years after Jesus went back to heaven, and that they were faithful, that they did the work you've called them to do, that the church is built upon the apostles and the prophets, and that you will glorify them when Jesus comes to sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel, that their names are written on the foundation stones of the eternal city. We pray that you help us to be like them, even though we know little about them. May we be found faithful in our own day to what you've called us to do, that we might be lights to this world. For Jesus' sake, we ask. Amen.